answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Trump posted on his social media, "For Iran, the clock is ticking and they better get moving fast or there won't be anything left of them. Time is of the essence, President DJT." Trump has been reluctant to restart military strikes on Iran. We have seen him nearing that point, but unwilling so far to pull the trigger. And yet it seems that Trump is growing very clearly impatient with the lack of progress in the negotiations that frankly aren't happening, and that he may be edging towards that decision. We'll wait and see here to see what decision he makes there. Pakistan tried to open up a window for diplomacy. Their interior minister was in Tehran over the weekend, meeting with the Iranian president, as well as the chief negotiator and speaker of parliament, Mohammad Ghalibaf, but it's unclear that there was really any progress made. And the gaps between the U.S. and Iran very much appear like they're too great to quickly bridge, and certainly with the speed that Trump wants to see them closed and wants to see an agreement here that still remains, at least from our perspective right now, incredibly unlikely.
And the problem is, Trump has allowed time and time again for another extension. And you know what you're hearing from the Democrats. If he moves forward and takes action against Iran right now, he's a hawk. He's just wanting to wipe them out. And he's given them continuous extensions. He's trying to avoid doing this. He does not want to harm the Iranian people more. But we're reaching a break point. And he's making it clear to Iran, as you heard in that news report, the clock is ticking. He has a meeting scheduled, I think, later this week, if not later, to possibly as early as tomorrow, with the vice president, defense secretary, I should say Secretary of War Hegseth, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mideast envoy Steve Witkoff, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, CIA leadership. In other words, everything is being put in place. You've seen it in the movies where they plot out the map and they show where everything is, and when we're going to start doing this and this and this. We're that close. Are you watching on Zoom right now? Because you can see us. We're broadcasting right now. If you go to Larry Connors USA Zoom, I should say not Zoom, Rumble, Larry Connors USA Rumble, Newstalk STL Rumble. We are broadcasting so you can watch the program live. And if you're watching what I'm showing right now, we are this close for Trump pulling the trigger. Could he back off again? Yes. Pakistan's trying to see that that happens, but Iran continues to play the rope-a-dope right out of Ali. It only is going to last so far. Thank you for joining us for hour number one, Larry Connors USA, May 18, 2026. By the way, this month is speeding by, so let me remind you again. At Lindenwood University, June 2nd, that's a Tuesday, June 2nd, at the Lindenwood University, the Hammond Institute for Free Enterprise and Newstalk STL and others are coming together to present for you the St. Charles County Executive Debate. The three candidates will be on stage June 2nd. It will begin at 7 o'clock. And on that night, Larry Connors USA will air only 1 hour direct so that we can go to the debate itself. If you can get there in person, I suggest you do it. That is June 2nd. Go to Newstalk STL and get more details. With Larry Connors USA, you're always going to get news, analysis, opinion, and education. You will leave each hour with more knowledge than you have right now. In our next hour, former FBI Director Comey complained, "Oh my God, oh my God, the FBI is under attack." You want to know why? And it's not so much the FBI, it's the leadership that still exists in there, and it's because of what you created when you were, quote, the leader. And Jasmine Crockett is crying foul. Oh, there's another whiner. Because the political maps are not going the way we want. It's not fair. It was perfectly fair when they were racially deciding how political maps should be drawn. Oh, speaking of race, There's a CNN commentator who had been a South Carolina congressman at one point, Bakari Sellers, and he makes such a bold statement that is outlandish about blacks today compared to what they had been in 1896. You will hear that in our next hour. Still later this hour, this nation is $39 trillion in debt. $39 trillion. We have a guest following up on a statement from a State Department spokesman who said, we are beginning to fall apart as a republic, and when it happens, it will happen quickly. Is that really going to be the possibility? My guest will discuss that coming up. And our story behind the story, on this date, 1980, and Mount St. Helens blew its top. An amazing story of a survival of one who was caught in the midst of it, a photographer who was recording everything and continued talking when he thought, I might already be blind or dead. That will be coming up before we wrap up this hour. In the meantime, once again, we go to Fox this time for the report. Iran is on the clock.
This appears to be the final warning from President Trump, warning Iran that if it doesn't make a deal, he's going to end the ceasefire and resume bombing and full-scale combat operations, perhaps with Israel as well, posting on Truth Social, quote, for Iran, the clock is ticking and they better get moving fast or there won't be anything left of them. Time is of the essence, signed President DJT. And Axios reporting, Trump warns Iran the clock is ticking, as we just heard, until U.S. launches harder strikes. U.S. officials say Trump wants a deal to end the war, but Iran's rejection of his many demands and refusal to make meaningful concessions on its nuclear program has put the military option back on the table. Trump is expected to convene his top national security team in the Situation Room on Tuesday to discuss military options, two U.S. officials said. Now, here's a Sunday roundup from the lawmakers back home.
I think you can't get a coherent answer from Iran because they can't be coherent. I think they're so disheveled now. They're so weakened. Weaken them further, and you may get a deal later. But you're not going to get a deal with this crowd until you hurt them more.
I fundamentally believe that Iran should never acquire a nuclear bomb. And that used to be all of every single Democrats had held that view as well, too. This isn't a crazy idea.
That you heard in the last, Senator Graham, Lindsey Graham, and then you heard Senator John Fetterman saying Democrats used to agree nuclear bomb could not be in the hands of Iran. But Fetterman is the only Democrat that's still standing with Trump. You've got to deny them to get that weapon. They cannot have it. In the meantime, there is a new concern involving Cuba, and this is a legitimate scare.
My understanding, the answer to that is yes. One of the sources he spoke to for the story said that this was specifically raised by Ratcliffe when he met with his Cuban counterparts down in Havana. It was also sort of a show of force for him to go down there. There's two ways to look at why the United States is coming out with this information now. And notably, Cuba is not denying it has the drones. It's just denying it would use them in an offensive way. It's saying it would only react to an aggression that is suggesting they would use them defensively. As the United States either wants to put more pressure on the regime in Havana to come up with a deal and tell them, hey, we know what you have here, and so let's make a deal. Or B, this could be a pretext for war, for an invasion, as Sam had just mentioned. What's pretty clear is that though there have been talks, the talks haven't been that fruitful, and the United States just keeps piling pressure on pressure on pressure on the regime in Havana.
That is Mark Caputo, White House correspondent for Axios, and we're talking about drones. An unnumbered amount of drones now in the possession of Cuba. Do I need to remind you? They are 90 miles off the coast of our nation. Senator Marco Rubio said last week he was offering the Cuban communist regime a $100 million American humanitarian assistance package to help the people. They're refusing. And what we're getting today is a figurehead president of Cuba is predicting a bloodbath of incalculable consequences, in his words, if we try to go into Cuba and take away those drones. Well, we cannot continue to let them just sit there, can we? In the meantime, the Department of Justice has indicted Raul Castro for what an event took place in 1996 when the Cuban Air Force shot down two unarmed Cessna planes operated by Brothers to the Rescue, an organization opposed to the Cuban government, but trying to go in and help provide humanitarian relief, and they shot down these planes. And now we are stepping forward and going to go after them. Former National Security Council Director Michael Allen.
I think the reason we would bring this up now is a signal to the Cuban regime that we're very, very serious about regime change, if you will, except not by way of military action. I think that was the purpose of Director Radcliffe's visiting of the island recently. I think that's the reason of some of the moves that we've been making of late to try and dangle out the prospect of some sanctions relief down the road, but not until fundamentally the Cuban state is heading in a different direction, because today it's only resulted in misery for their people, and we need to figure out a way, as President Trump wants to assert more U.S. power in the region, the Western Hemisphere, a way to work forward with that island so close to us.
And again, we have, according to some of the claims, and we'll go back to Axios, is there, citing, quote, classified intel, Cuba currently possessing more than 300 military drones and, quote, might be considering hitting Florida, blaming Russia and Iran for supplying that technology. So whatever Trump does at this point, well, it may well depend on what Cuba does, or it may be that we need a preemptive strike to make sure they do not put drones in our airspace headed into the state of Florida or elsewhere. You want to be in the chair to make that decision? That's why you elected Trump. And he's got a staff around him that's very decisive. Cautious, decisive, but willing to do what is necessary to protect America and our citizens. I mentioned earlier about that 1996 event when the Cuban Air Force shot down two unarmed Cessna planes that were trying to bring in humanitarian aid and other support for, obviously, the regime opposed to Cuba. But they were unarmed, and they shot them down. Now, how did that happen exactly? I'll get into that in more detail for you coming up in our next hour. In the meantime, Trump continues to show his political power. Louisiana Senator GOP Bill Cassidy lost in a primary race over the weekend. Cassidy in the Senate since 2015 as, quote, a Republican. Well, he faced two Republican challengers in the primary. Both of them were endorsed by Trump. Anybody but Cassidy. Cassidy loses. Reaction from Louisiana Senator Kennedy.
Well, Peter, here's the way I see it. Unless you're God's perfect idiot, the result was predictable. I mean, ground control to Major Tom. The polls have shown for well over a year that Senator Cassidy was in trouble. I think the president's endorsement of Congresswoman Letlow was sort of the icing on the cake. Bill knew that. But he decided to run anyway. I respect that. I thank him for his service. He was very gracious in his concession speech. We now got a runoff between two fine people. For what it's worth, I don't plan to get involved. A wise man once said nothing. why? Because he's a wise man. But I don't plan on weighing in, and you know, if one of them starts talking about my mama, I might.
Yeah, he might, and he most certainly will. That is, again, Louisiana Senator Kennedy talking about his fellow senator from Louisiana, Bill Cassidy, losing his primary race over the weekend just to try to stay in. Cassidy of Louisiana, one of seven Republican senators who voted to remove Trump from office after the January 6th so-called insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Trump had written in a True Social about Cassidy. His disloyalty to the man who got him elected is now part of legend. It's nice to see his political career is over. So Cassidy finished third in a three-way race. Letlow and another candidate, State Treasurer John Fleming, advancing to June 27 runoff. And at last check, Trump was willing to endorse either one of them, primarily Letlow. And in conceding the race Saturday, Cassidy hinted he would not finish his second term quietly, but in an apparent dig at Trump, he also said he would not contest his loss. Listen to this quote. "You don't pout. You don't whine. You don't claim the election was stolen. You thank the voters for the privilege of representing the state or the country for as long as you've had that privilege, and that's what I'm doing right now." Dig, dig, dig in the face of Trump. But the Democrats have been doing the same thing, pouting and whining every time they lose an election, or gerrymandering. And we know there's been so much evidence presented. There was a lot of foul activity in both elections that Trump, or all three elections, actually, Trump was involved in. Cassidy told voters, "You should cast your ballot based on the present and the future, not the past." For many primary voters, Cassidy's move to convict Trump felt like a betrayal. And then here came Trump with his endorsement of the other candidates. "We want to thank God for saving our airmen involved in an air show in Boise, Idaho. Two U.S. Navy jets collided midair during a gunfighter skies air show. Two Navy EA-18 Growler jets colliding midair. Looks like one flew right into the top of the other. Pilot error is probably going to come into play. But all four parachutes open as they got out of it." Oh, make note of this. Before the U.S. staff and traveling press left China the other day, they had dropped all their press credentials provided by the Chinese, burner phones from the White House staff, any delegation pins. They threw them away in a bin at the bottom of the stairs before they got on Air Force One. And you know why. Because we never know how China is going to try to steal information from us. Coming up, is our republic coming undone slowly and then maybe crashing? That will be the discussion with our guest coming up with the John Birch Society. And the story behind the story, it was on this date, Mount St. Helens blew, an amazing survivor story. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Another day, must be another roofer in town. And John Beal and I were talking. He said, you know, every time you turn around, there's a new roofing company. Many of them have no idea what they're doing. And the statistics show that many will be out of business within 2 to 5 years. Who are you going to call to help you then? You need to remember only one name, John Beal. John Beal Roofing. You have a problem, he can take care of it. And we'll be here for you. John Beal Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Spring weather has everyone sneezing, even inside their home or building. Instead of saying gazoons height, call Wellington Environmental to perform air tests to determine if mold levels are too high. Gesund height is the same as saying bless you after someone sneezes, the German word meaning wishing you good health. Wellington Environmental can perform air testing that is simple, fast, and can identify issues keeping you from having good health. Wellington does the same for hospitals and nursing homes for indoor concerns. Give them a call. It's simple. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Tell Cindy, I need air sampling. They've seen it all. They can help you. Next time you hear Gesundheit, think Wellington. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Anderson, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team, built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAnderson.com. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAnderson.com. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as support dogs for our brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. We were raising the question before we took to the break, is our republic about to come undone with a collapse gradually or suddenly? The other day, former State Department official Ron McCammon warned, and I'm quoting him, our republic is falling gradually. Total collapse will be sudden. So is America following the historical trajectory of previous republics? And part of it has to deal with our $39 trillion in debt as we approach being 250 years old. Our guest, Steve Bonta, publisher of The New American with the John Birch Society. Steve, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Hey, great to be back. So I think that quote is a reference to Hemingway. I think one of his characters in one of his novels says something like, I went bankrupt gradually and then suddenly, and it's been repeated often since.
I think you're right. I think he did kind of, but he didn't quote him in reference to Hemingway, but you're right. I think that was a linkage. But is that correct in any way?
It may well be. It may well be. I mean, I'm getting a lot of questions about that lately, and we cannot ignore this towering national debt. The question is, the ship is clearly heading towards the shoals. Do we have enough time to turn things around? I mean, I think we do, but the problem is, to extend the analogy a little bit, it looks to me like the ship is heading toward the shoals. It's clear where the course is going to lead if a course correction isn't made. But the problem is that the crew and the captain are all having a Donnybrook and fighting over who gets to hold the tiller. And so the ship is unable to turn. And so, that's what we're facing right now.
So are you referring to the president, the executive branch, and the legislative branch, or what?
All of the above. All of the above. And I would throw in the American people, I think, who still probably, in the aggregate, are not as concerned as they should be about what could happen. There's sort of the assumption that, America always muddles through financially and economically. And truly, if we do reach the point where we go off a fiscal cliff and we have a dollar collapse, or, to return to that metaphor, the ship does, in fact, run into the shoals, we're going to be on uncharted territory, because it's going to it will lead not only to the dissolution of the dollar, but to the entire dollar-denominated global financial system, if it comes to such a pass.
You also have to consider the input and the constant pounding of the drum by the legacy media. I think they almost want us to crash and fall apart.
Well, I think that there are organizations and people who want to see the dissolution of what they would consider to be a wicked, exploitative, racist capitalist system.
Yep.
And so there's no question that there are people who are secretly, and maybe not so secretly, cheering on America's impending financial and economic demise and would love to see it happen.
There's a connection, obviously, between any fiscal instability and the leadership, and then do you move into an authoritarianism approach, or do you go for a ground level roots, grassroots support? What's the answer?
Well, it's hard to know. I think that per the Constitution, if we restored constitutional money, got rid of the Federal Reserve System or phased it out in a reasonable length of time, and coupled that with a serious, sustained, principled drawdown of government spending, basically reduce the federal budget to within constitutional boundaries, we would be able to solve the problem rather quickly. So I think there's plenty of time. I mean, $38 trillion is a lot of money, even considering how degraded the dollar has become over the decades. But it's certainly a problem that can be solved. The question is, do we have the political and societal will to do it? In particular, will we elect the people who are willing to do it instead of just having a handful of, Thomas Massie and Ron Paul types in Congress warning about what's going to happen eventually, but the general consensus of the Demo Republican mainstream being, let's not worry about it, kick the can down the road, and ultimately it's more important to continue the spectacle.
Well, Cassidy has already kicked out. Massie could well be next, but you still have the issue that Trump does continue to spend. We have a war issue underway. We're spending there.
Yep.
We have tried to cut back. We're trying to claw back money that's already been gone, has gone out the door due to fraud, mismanagement, not just by the Biden administration, but numerous, including Republican administrations.
Well, that's true, but I just like to respectfully point out that a lot of this fraud is occurring in agencies that really don't even have any constitutional basis for existing.
Amen.
In the first place.
Amen.
So if you're simply saying, well, we're going to make these, which what seems to be, by the way, what Trump intends to do, if you take him at his word, not to abolish these agencies wholesale, but to make them more streamlined and make them operate more efficiently. Well, we don't want more efficient unconstitutional government. That's not what we want. We want to return to the limits of the Constitution so that we can restore the Republic in its full vigor. And if we do that, I think a lot of these problems will maybe not solve themselves, but will prove to be a lot less acute than people imagine. But there's no question that if we continue for too much longer in the current path, be it guided by MAGA Republicans or radical left Democrats or some other alternative, we are going to come, eventually come a croppers of the laws of economics. And they're going to do the same thing to us that they did to post-World War I Germany and Argentina and many other countries.
Well, as you pointed out, we have inside our nation, we have those who are be more than willing to see this republic fall apart. And, you look at electing a Mondami to run New York City, and the first thing he says, we're going to need more money. Well, you already knew you needed more money, but you said you're going to offer this free and that free and that free. They push Marxism, socialism, communism, and then when they get a hold of it, they realize it's not going to work, but they're not going to give up the fight.
Well, and New York is a good example because, for a place that has so many intelligent people in the electorate, boy, are they gullible. Because what Mondani did was, of course, he went to the state of New York, hat in hand, and said, we need a bailout.
Yep.
And then once he got the bailout, he said, see, we've solved the problem. Well, the problem isn't solved at all. It's made immeasurably worse because it's, yet again, kick the can down the road with the full complacence, from what I can tell, of a majority of the New York City electorate. And so writ large, that's the problem we're dealing with in the country, is that people are so easily and willfully deceived by these shysters and mountebanks,
And it happens predominantly, obviously, within blue controlled states and cities. And even New York Governor Hochul admitted, we're more dire straits than I thought. Suddenly she wakes up.
Yeah, well, in California, much the same, and these other states. But the problem is, these states have, New York, for example, is the center of global finance. You know, that's where the New York Federal Reserve does its thing. It's where all the money center banks are, you know. And so if New York goes down, it's going to take the whole planet with it. And so the New Yorkers know this. And so they figure they've got the rest of us by, well, I won't say by lot, but let's just say that they've got us in a situation where they can, continue to demand being bailed out, because obviously the alternative is, complete financial dissolution.
I thought we'd reach a point that we were going to recognize you're not too big to fail, and the fact that Wall Street could well fail itself, but we'll just relocate in Dallas or, who knows, Nashville.
Well, one would suppose. I mean, I would like to see that the reason that has not happened, that New York has, in defiance of all logic, and 100 years of socialist legislation contra kind of what the rest of the country would like, they still remain the center of finance. Why is this? Well, because when the Federal Reserve System was created, the New York Fed was given special authority. They're the ones that do all the transaction of government debt on behalf of the Federal Reserve System, and it's located in New York City, along with all the gold reserves of the Fed. So that's the reason that all of the privileged financial institutions that participate in this gargantuan monetary Ponzi scheme are located in New York City, and New York continues to be able to defy the odds
and elect all kinds
of crazies as neighbors.
But is there any reason Mayor it thing. Cannot be relocated?
Well, in theory, no, but as long as the Federal Reserve System remains and the New York Fed has an exclusive franchise over, open market operations and things like this, in practical terms, ain't going to happen, there's plenty of wealth in Chicago and Dallas and Charlotte and other places, but they don't have the access to the global currency supply, to the supply of dollars that the New York money center banks have. So until that state of affairs has changed, it's probably not going to be feasible.
All right. Well, we're down and out of town on time. I want to thank you, Steve Bonta, publisher of The New American. You got a big article coming out anytime soon. We certainly should be following, I imagine.
Yes. Well, go to thenewamerican.com and see for yourself. You can subscribe to our monthly magazine there in print or online. And we have lots of new material daily on the site that isn't behind a paywall either.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate your time. You bet. Points well made. Frightening points at that. The story behind the story today. Many of you will recall this event happening, but you're going to hear from it from someone who was caught right in the midst of it and praying to God he was going to get out. Not sure he was. The story behind the story, the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I want to share something with you. Cooking a pizza using coal creates an amazing pizza. Only one place to get it, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield. Of course, they offer a wide variety of pasta, but you just visit the website NapoliSTL.com, dine in or take out, and get ready for patio season. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Try it. You can thank me later. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day, because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. VincentsJewelers.com. VincentsJewelers.com. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Anderson, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team. Built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS. Renewal by Anderson.com. 877-WINDOWS. Renewal by Anderson.com. When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-E-R, underlaw.com.
This is News Talk STL.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off that old Lone Ranger. And you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. Now, Larry Connors with the story behind the story.
May 17th, 1980. 40 years ago today was a beautiful day on the mountain in southwest Washington. It was also the most significant day of Carolyn Dreiger's life. She and a colleague had traveled to the active volcano Mount St. Helens to drop off equipment at a U.S. geological station. They planned to stay the night, but geologist David Johnston, tasked with monitoring the mountain, warned them against it.
He said, let's just have as few people here as possible. We were very disappointed that we were not going to spend the night looking at this beautiful volcano. The sun was just starting to set. We stopped and I took a couple of last photos of Mount St. Helens.
The very next morning, at 8:32 a.m., Mount St. Helens erupted.
They are calling it the most violent eruption of this volcano in 32,000 years.
The energy that came out of Mount St. Helens that day is bigger than any nuclear weapon that we have in our arsenal.
Steve Olson is the author of a book about it.
The whole northern flank of the volcano collapsed into this valley that was between us, and that let out this burst of pressure that had been building up inside the volcano.
The blast triggered the largest landslide in recorded history and flattened trees for 220 square miles with a cloud of smoke, ash, and pumice. In all, 57 people died.
Now, prior to this date, May 18th, 1980, there had been more seismic activity that was, again, warning something is getting ready to happen. On March 20 of 1980, there was a 4.2 quake Mount St. Helens. On March 27, steam started venting. And by the end of April, the north side of the mountain had started to bulge out. And then came May 18th, 8:32, I should say, in the morning, a second quake, magnitude 5.1. Gary Rehnquist was with others camping around the area watching. It's going to be a little hard to hear what he's saying as they're doing a two-way transmissions to others. Get out now.
Now we've got an eruption down here. Now we've got a big slide coming off. The slide is coming off of the west slope. Now we've got a whole great big eruption out of the crater. And we got another that opened up on the west side. A whole west side, northwest side, is sliding down.
Thank you.
how far back and get out now. The eruption on May 18, 1980, the most economically destructive volcanic event in U.S. history, as you heard earlier. 57 killed, 200 homes, 47 bridges, 15 miles of railway, 185 miles of highway destroyed. A massive debris avalanche triggered by that 5.1 earthquake. It reduced the elevation of Mount St. Helens summit from 9,600 feet to 8,300 feet, leaving a mile-wide horseshoe-shaped crater. They, with these warnings in advance, some of the property owners around Mount St. Helens and those visiting were given orders, you've got to move now, and we are establishing a range that we think you will be safe, but was it far enough?
A lot of people that own property up here that wanted to be able to get to their property, and geologists would issue warnings saying, no, we think the volcano is too dangerous.
No, sir, this is a road closed.
Then, as now, debate raged over whether to protect people's livelihoods or their lives.
They have to put a roadblock up just to keep the tourists out. What do they expect us to survive on? If it's so dangerous here, why are we still here? And I think the whole thing is just ridiculous.
Ridiculously deadly, it would turn out. In fact, scientists had even drawn up new, larger boundaries, which might have saved lives. But the plans sat on then-Governor Dixie Lee Ray's desk unsigned, as she attended a rhododendron festival.
In fact, all but three of the people who were killed in the eruption were outside of the danger zones that had been established.
In other words, it wasn't far enough back. There was another issue that reduced the casualty count. That was, this was a Sunday at the time of the eruption.
When the volcano erupted, 1,500 feet of the mountain vaporized in seconds in a violent, superheated cloud of debris, killing people as far away as 20 miles.
I think people would think a cloud of dust and debris, you know, doesn't seem that dangerous.
Yeah, this was more than a cloud. It was more like a stone hurricane, essentially. A hurricane made up of pulverized stone that was moving with such force that it could just knock down anything in its path.
One of the first to die, geologist David Johnston. It turns out he hadn't planned to be on the mountain that day. He was filling in for his colleague, Don Swanson.
He had taken my place on Saturday night.
In the 45 seconds before the cloud hit, he was able to radio out one last warning, telling the Vancouver monitoring station, this is it. His body has never been found.
There was a KOMO news photographer who was also caught in the danger zone. He survived with an amazing story. So yes, there is more to the story behind the story.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Do you know why I endorse Cafe Napoli, all the locations? Visit any of them and you will quickly appreciate the quality of food, service, atmosphere. So maybe I'll see you at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli Kirkwood, Napoli 2 in Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, right next door to Napoli C. Or maybe you'll find me at Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Now you know why I endorse Napoli. NapoliSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Now, the end of the story behind the story.
When the mountain started going, I looked back up towards St. Helens again, and I saw a wall of water, mud, and trees coming down the hill towards me very quickly. I obviously got in my car, took off, looked in the rearview mirror, and saw it catching up with me rather rapidly. I knew I didn't have any chance at all to outrun it, so I came up on a little logging road on the left that led down into a gully and up onto a hill. I thought maybe I could make it down through the gully and up on that hill and get out of the water's way. I started down the hill and I made it, I was going about 60 miles an hour when the water hit the gully and took out the road, and it exploded the road. It didn't just wash out, it just exploded with flying trees, rocks. Threw the car in reverse, started back up the hill about 30 miles an hour, and the whole back side of the hill came down. So I was trapped right in the middle, and right then I really thought I'd had it. I got out of the car. The alarm went off. That's like you heard the alarm going off. I was not too worried about it at that time. I got out and I thought, well, I might as well break out my camera and start taking some pictures. And that's what I did.
It's just what we see right here.
Yes.
What was the time frame, the time span, from the time the mountain blew until the time that this water and wall of mud was enveloping you?
That's real hard to say. Gosh, it seems like anywhere from 10 seconds to 2 hours. It's just, there was no time frame to it to me. It was just something that just happened. There wasn't a real definite feeling of time for me at all to it.
All right. The time that you took off and now you're stranded was the span of about what?
It was probably about 5 minutes.
All right.
Approximately.
All right. You are stranded.
Like I said, there were so many things happening so fast that there was no real feeling of time to it.
One little area, you in the car, and now you're shooting this film.
Yes.
Okay. This is when the ash begins to fall.
The ash had been building in the sky above me. It was all kind of moving towards me. The ash was not coming down on me at that time. I was still thinking that I was going to get a lot more water and a lot more debris coming down the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that still had me pretty worried. But then I noticed that the lower washout in the lower gully that I'd first tried to make, it started subsiding some. And I thought, if I'm going to have any chance of getting out of here at all, that is the way I've got to go. So I grabbed my camera gear, and I started out in that. It was mud. It was moving fairly slowly. It was steaming. It was deep. And I didn't really think I was going to make it through it to the other side, but I did. Somehow I made it through it, and I started up a logging road. And that's when the ash hit. The ash and the sulfur hit.
Uh-huh.
The ash and the sulfur. And again, that is KMO photographer Dave Vid Crockett, not Davy, but you can call him that. But then as all this began to unfold around him, he kept his camera rolling and recording the best he could.
Well, dear God, whoever finds this, I don't know. You can't see this, I'm sure it's too dark. I've left the car behind. First to the gear, we got one magazine. And as you can tell probably from this picture, I'm walking towards the only light I can see on top of a ridge. I can hear the mountain behind me rumbling. It's an enormous mud and water, so I came down and washed out the road. I never really thought I'd believe this or say this, but at this moment, I honest to God believe I'm dead. There's really no way to describe those feelings. I feel the ash now in my eyes. It's getting very hard to breathe. Burns to breathe. Because I'm having trouble talking. Burns to breathe. Burns my eyes. Oh, dear God. My God, this is hell. I just can't describe it. It's pitch black. Just pitch black. This is hell on earth I'm walking through.
It was hell. And that plume of ash and sulfur rose something like a dozen to 16 miles above sea level. The FAA sent out warnings to pilots to avoid the area. The ash plume was moving to the east at a speed of about 60 miles an hour. It reached Idaho by noon. Found on the tops of cars and roofs the next morning as far away as Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. After the 1980 eruption, the volcano experienced continuous volcanic activity until 2008. Geologists predicting future eruptions could be more destructive. It still remains to this day a popular hiking spot and is climbed year-round. And in fact, in 1982, 2 years after the eruption, the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument was established by Congress. But those hikers, maybe they had heard the story of that KMO photographer, David Crockett, and what he went through that day, they might have considered otherwise, because as you heard him say, he thought he was in the midst of hell and was not sure he was going to make it out.
God, I want to live. You know, Shram, you were right. You were right, Shram. When I saw that mountain go, I turned that car around and I could see in the rearview mirror, you know, I could see the stuff coming. There was no way I was going to outrun that. I just parked that car and I started running for high ground. And that mud flow came down. It came within 3 feet of the car, man, with trees and boulders and things, you know, five times as big as that news car, Shram. Oh, about 50 feet from me. My God, you were right. Never should have come up here. You were right. I still say I'm going to live to tell my grandchildren about this, so. With God's help, I am.
With God's help, he will be able to tell that story to his grandchildren. In his early 20s, when he was on the mountain at that time. Mount St. Helens is about 90 miles southeast of Seattle. And since all the wind was going to the east, Seattle was not threatened. It is northeast of Portland, about 50 miles, so they saw some ash as well, but most of it was falling into more remote areas. Still, once again, you had almost 60 dead in that one moment on this date, 1980. Our story behind the story tomorrow, we're going to take a little lighter approach. My days as an entrepreneur selling spud nuts. You know what spud nuts are? Well, I'd sell you one. Oh, by the way, preview for the story behind the story Wednesday, the Joplin tornado. As always, we appreciate you listening. Tell your family and friends. And above all, keep around for our second hour. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
John Bill Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call the John Bill to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Bill has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF, John Bill. There's only one place you can get pizza cooked over coals, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Of course, Napoli Brothers has a great selection of pasta dishes. Between the pizza and pasta, trust me, you will not leave hungry. Then, a few doors down, Lit Cigar Lounge, a wide variety of quality cigars, each offering a unique smoke. That cigar, some premium whiskey, all you need to do is enjoy. Lit Cigar Lounge and Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta. Chesterfield Valley. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as Support Dogs for Our Brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Let's be candid, honest. No out-of-state law firm can represent you better than Under Law. O-N-D-E-R. Hometown roots, attorneys living right here with you and your family. When you suffer an injury because someone else was negligent, Under Law will make sure the other party takes full responsibility. You'll get full compensation, not a backroom deal worked out with some insurance companies. And of course, we're moving into the stormy season. And again, when you have a legitimate claim, you should be properly compensated. Under Law does not toy around with adjusters, investigators, lawyers trained to cheat you of what is rightfully yours. Under Law has already recovered millions for families across Missouri and Illinois. Under wins. Not just a catchy phrase, it's a fact. So I'll repeat it. Under wins. Under Law. .com. O-N-D-E-R. Underlaw.com. Wins.
This is News Talk STL.